Well, one thing we can agree on, I think, is that 2020 has been a very volatile year, and we're going to be talking about how this affects children and their families with our next guests. Cheryl Cato back with us, child and family therapist and director of the Rainbow Project, a child and family counseling resource clinic in Madison. Cheryl, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Larry. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Dr. Ryan Aranga, a psychiatrist and an assistant professor of child and adolescent psychiatry at the UW-Madison, with us as well. He researches trauma and associated mental health and illness issues. Dr. Aranga, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Oh, it's great to be here, Larry. Thank you.
So how has the pandemic or the Black Lives Matter movement affected your child? Are there positives to what's been going on so far? We'd love to have you part of the conversation at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Cheryl, maybe just to start, you can talk with us about the Rainbow Project.
Yes, yes. We are a child and family counseling and resource clinic, and we specialize in working with younger children and their families, so primarily from infancy through 10 or 11 years of age, and we're sometimes working with 1, 2, 3 generations where there has been trauma, and we usually are working with children where there has been child abuse, neglect, domestic violence, but also the full areas of continuum range of trauma, including serious accidents, community violence, cultural histories of trauma, and sometimes multiple traumas, including serious accidents or natural disasters.
Wow. And Dr. Aranga, tell us about your research in the areas of trauma.
Sure, and it's really great to be here with Cheryl. She and the work they're doing at the Rainbow Project is really amazing. So I do clinical work with traumatized youth and families as well, and help to supervise many of our residents and child psychiatry fellows in their clinical care. And then I also direct the Brave Research Center, which is really focused on using neuroscience to try to better understand how we can promote resilience and recovery in kids and families after they've been through traumatic experiences.
And has the Safer at Home order affected your work?
Oh, it definitely has. From the research standpoint, we still have a halt on our studies, at least as far as in-person visits are concerned. So we haven't been able to recruit or even finish our backlog of volunteers, participants who are engaging in our studies and waiting to get through. So we're hoping, if all goes well, fingers crossed, to restart those studies for recruitment in the next month or two.
And Cheryl, how has the Rainbow Project been able to continue its work during the past several months?
Well, we have an amazing staff that has definitely risen to the occasion, and we're doing all of our connections with families and children via telehealth, so virtually having sessions, and that has been a learning curve, but we've really been able to deepen our experience with that fairly quickly with about 100 families, and it is amazing how the families have also risen to the occasion. But the challenges are that then we are also seeing or needing to maybe make contacts with these families much more than we usually would, as well as seeing some of the basic needs in addition to some of the mental health needs that we're working on together also has risen. So the risks of suicide or depression and anxiety, and sometimes coming out even in somatic illnesses, are increasing. So it is a combination of things, particularly with some of the racial equity movement issues that are coming up as well.
Well, you've given us a good framework for the rest of our discussion, and we will continue with the discussion with Dr. Ryan Haringa, psychiatrist at UW-Madison, Cheryl Cato, child and family therapist and director of the Rainbow Project. We'll talk with them some more right after this look at the news. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the effect that living through the last few months has had on our children and families. Our guest, Dr. Ryan Haringa, a psychiatrist and an assistant professor of child and adolescent psychiatry at the UW-Madison. He researches trauma and associated mental health and illness. Also with us, Cheryl Cato, a child and family therapist and the director of the Rainbow Project, a child and family counseling and resource clinic in Madison. So, as we talk with them, what questions do you have about talking to your child about current events? Do you think he or she may be traumatized? Join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, let's talk about trauma for a minute. How do you decide, you know, all these things that have been going on the last several months, how do you decide if someone's been traumatized? Does there need to be even a clinical diagnosis for something like that?
Well, I think there is such a broad continuum of symptoms, and much of it will depend on how much that's going to be interfering in your day-to-day life. You know, whether a child, adult, a family, or a community, or business, or city, state, country, it really is going to bring out and amplify some of the best and strengths as well as vulnerabilities, depending. I think that crisis will amplify those things. So I think we really need to be aware of our own symptoms. What are those differences and how adaptive are we? I think stress comes when what we are viewing before us is something that's beyond our capacity to fix or deal with. And so with that, what happens to us with that anxiety, which can really be a good thing to make us move to make decisions and problem solve and really be able to solve what's before us. And so some have, whenever we do our work, which is really trauma work at the Rainbow Project with young children and families, we are side by side also building protective factors and resiliency, as well as dealing with recovery from the trauma. They kind of go hand in hand. So I think that is one way of assessing it, is how much is it interfering in their day-to-day life and development. And Ryan may have some other things to add.
Yeah, Ryan?
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Cheryl. And, you know, a lot of it is looking for the types of symptoms that may come along with trauma exposure. And I would first also want to acknowledge the impacts of both racism and COVID are really disproportionately affecting our BIPOC communities, so Black and Indigenous and people of color. And so they've definitely taken the greatest hit when it comes to COVID, and for centuries have really taken the brunt of racism and discrimination. And so, you know, those communities, I think, are being particularly affected by the traumatic turns in our society and in our world. And I think when you're looking at many of the symptoms that could come up, it could be in terms of vulnerability or, you know, things to be concerned about, the feelings of overwhelm and not being able to sleep, really not being able to get images of current events, or thinking of a family member who may have been ill or even died from COVID, not being able to get those experiences out of one's mind. concentration may be really difficult. For kids, they may show a lot of anger and irritability. Of course, we adults can show that as well when we're under severe stress and trauma. So those are definitely a few of the things to be on the lookout for. As Cheryl pointed out, a lot of resilience can also come about. I mean, people, families are incredibly strong and often have many of their own ways in which to cope and deal with these very intense stressors that we're going through.
You know, I can see where kids and adults could be affected similarly. Are there differences, though, between the children and the adults and how they're affected?
Well, I think for us, working particularly with younger children, developmentally, they are often very self-centered. That's where they're supposed to be when they're younger. And so they also have limited experience and scope of other experiences that they've had. So they may have the world view that, you know, this is happening. And when we look at some of the other tragedies, whether it's the September 11th event, and children right away are automatically thinking about their safety and their family and not wanting, for example, their parents to go to work anymore because they're seeing certain things happening. So they draw some conclusions because of that, and then they may see the same thing over and over again. So developmentally, they're going to be viewing things very, very differently, and it's very scary. So it's really important that they are relying on their parents and their caregivers, and that's an additional stress for those caregivers because they know they want to present a reassurance, and yet themselves are really feeling overwhelmed. So we always say at Rainbow, it's all right to show those feelings and to talk about them, but to reassure them that you're going to be able to handle it and not to burden children with their particular feelings. And then how do the caregivers get the support that they need to cope with some of the symptoms that Ryan was mentioning? We are seeing that happening. And so it's really hard for the adults to step forward and really be able to help the child. So that's why we really feel it's important to support both. And that's where some of those resiliencies and really practice. It isn't always going to be easy to do some of these things, but we know some of the factors that would help with that. And certainly when I say that the crisis is going to amplify the strong and the weak areas in our systems, healthcare and access to healthcare, poverty, housing, access to mental health services that are culturally specific. Those are all things that I think are actually highlighted now even more so because of the need. And so I'm hoping that it's an opportunity to identify those gaps, to be able to really restore some of them from that perspective, because before the COVID incident and some of the other things that have been happening recently, these were issues that were happening before as far as waiting lists for appropriate mental health services for the right ages and for the right and culturally very proficient. So we really can see this as an opportunity to really address that. But there are differences, you know, with children and with adults, but there are also some, you know, significant similarities.
Yeah.
And so it really is a matter sometimes of us thinking we can't work with children only in isolation. With some things in terms of change, we need to work with both.
Ryan, a comment?
Yeah, I think that's critical what Cheryl just said, and that there certainly can be some differences in how kids may present. I think, like Cheryl said, they may not be able to voice consciously what they might be worrying about or reacting to. It may come out as more anger, irritability, or just strong emotions and feelings, whereas adults and older teens might be able to explain that, what it is that's bothering them. But with Cheryl, the last point that Cheryl made is really critical. We can't really help kids if we're not helping the entire family. And it's really important to consider how the caregivers in the family are doing. And if we're not addressing their needs and getting them help and resources and support, then that child is going to be really difficult for him or her to recover. And then, as Cheryl, I think, was pointing out, too, how do we help families recover and be resilient? Well, all of these systems that she mentioned, I think, are critical for us to address as well at a societal, larger community level.
Yeah. Let's give our listeners a chance to join in. You can phone in with your questions or comments or maybe your experience at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, different approaches that parents might decide to take when it comes to working with children. Some people could just gloss it over, put a positive spin on everything, or sit down and in-depth explain. I mean, there's all different kinds of ways, I suppose, you could think that it would be good to do. But, I'm sure it's hard for parents to make those kinds of decisions as well, given that they're having their own problems.
Well, one thing that I'm very hopeful about is that there are many resources that are coming out that really give concrete suggestions to parents about how to even talk about this situation when the child is already anxious, for example. And so there are all these other, in our situation, there are already traumas, whether it's domestic violence or sexual abuse, and you have some of these other layers that are added on top of it, that we really do have more pinpointed resources for people in guiding them through. But it's all the more important because early on with brain development, it is important to really help those families as early as possible. So we're even looking at how to create strong attachment and trust, because that is going to also be kind of almost an inoculation for if trauma happens, they will have some resiliency protective factors there when they have that. But it will be very difficult for a child if they do not have that firm foundation of trust and attachment with a parent. So some of the things that I have been seeing are really helpful in saying, well, if your child is this age or this age, how can you ease up on your expectations and discipline during this time? You know, how can you, I think that those are important for seeking out some of the information, short of also having connections with actual therapists or support in those specific areas. There are some things that you can try to use as resources and support for yourself.
Yeah. A comment from you, Dr. Haranga?
Yeah, I think that's really important what Cheryl is mentioning. And I think a key element of this is bringing compassion. So for parents and caregivers, bringing some compassion to themselves and understanding that they may be under a lot of stress. They may have lost a job. They may be worrying about, you know, possible eviction or outright homelessness. There may be other health-related stressors coming up. So just understanding that they are doing the best that they can, you know, given the situation, and that it helps to have some compassion, that knowing that parents or caregivers may be irritable or angry with their kids at times. And as Cheryl was pointing out, releasing some of those expectations or relaxing some of those expectations can be really helpful. And then I think for parents as well, it's helpful to really acknowledge that they don't necessarily have to fix everything for their children. So part of what can come up in situations like these is this sense of powerlessness or not being able to protect my child from the world and all of its dangers. There's a degree of acceptance to that that can be really helpful. And yet, despite all those dangers being there, the important thing to communicate to our children is that we are going to do our very best to walk through this with them and to guide them and support them and love them.
Yeah. You talked earlier about how the Black Lives Matter protests and the COVID-19 have some similarities in a way in how they've affected people. How is it different, the BLM, Black Lives Matter, different in terms of stress and fear from the COVID-19? And do you see anything different there?
Well, I think we do. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychological Association recently have come out with reports that identify racism as a major threat to children of all ages in determining their emotional, physical, and mental health outcomes. And I think it, again, is highlighting what happened even before this that's been going on. It's one thing to have access to physical health and care and mental health care, but it's what kind also. And so those are the things that I think are being raised when we see, even in Dane County, 30% increases in suicide. And this is before this, all of this happened. Infant mortality risks for African-American infants, diabetes, heart disease. So these are some of the things that, you know, are there, including cultural history of trauma, that now research is showing may take 3 generations or more to really not have those generations afterwards experience.
Wow.
Besides the current oppression that might be happening. So there are lots of layers to that definitely do impact. We're working so hard on cultural identity and pride and self-image as a part of recovering from trauma. And that's when you see, even at a very young age, that kind of, they may have pride and a very positive self-esteem, but socially they may not be greeted that way in some situations. So it is all the more that they have that kind of strong resiliency and some of those protective factors, you know, and having supportive relationships and healthy coping strategies and having a sense of purpose in order to really develop all of those, you need that really firm foundation so that you have the emotional well-being and stability and the willingness to even seek help and then also problem-solving skills. So I'm always amazed and that we do what we do and have been doing it because we see not only resiliency amidst many, many challenges for generations, but we also see some vibrancy in just being able to not only survive but thrive.
Yeah, and you've been doing it for a long, long time. I was just thinking about how long you've, many years. I was trying to think back when you were first on the show.
We are celebrating our 40th year.
Oh, my goodness.
Next month, as serving over 16,000 children and their families.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, Dr. Haringa, what's the most important thing for listeners to take away from this discussion, do you think?
I would say a couple of things. I would also just first acknowledge Cheryl is a real force for good in our community, and she's the work she has been doing in the Rainbow Project is absolutely incredible. So I would second that, what you were saying, Larry. But some key things for listeners, for families to remember, I think the first is really that we have two public health crises at least two public health crises going on. COVID certainly, as we've talked about, but there is this ongoing public health crisis of racism and really how that's embedded in our society and the institutions. It's not just how police operate or are set up. It's every aspect of society. And I think what's important for folks to recognize is that COVID, as Cheryl was pointing out, has only amplified the disparities and the stress and trauma impact that this has had on our Black and Indigenous and people of color, those communities. But the other point Cheryl made is that people have remarkable ability for resilience and bouncing back. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is an example of that. It's taking this real root cause of injustice and racism and using that energy to promote positive change. And I think families, children, parents, caregivers have that level of resilience built into them as well. And if we can help them cultivate that, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both for spending some time with us today. I'm sure we'll have a chance to do this again, Cheryl and Ryan. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Larry.
I appreciate it very much. Cheryl Cato is a child and family therapist, the director of the Rainbow Project, a family child counseling service clinic in Madison. Dr. Ryan Herenga is a psychiatrist and assistant professor of child and adolescent psychiatry at UW-Madison. I'm sure we'll be talking with them again. I just a quick mention that the list of books that Daniel Golden had for us, we'll have that up on our website. Go to the WPR.org/Larry. And you'll find that list of books with some quick descriptions of them. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.